Well, we have 9 more holes to go, so how about you two fellas follow me to the 10th tee?
On to the back 9, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of Hall of Famer Billy Casper.
2 players down the middle on the 10th hole.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Welcome into the back 9, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio. Brian and Bob with you. America's favorite caddy will be joining us coming up in just a few minutes. The 50th playing of the Players' Championship. It's the 42nd time that it's been held here at TPC Sawgrass. Last week we were talking about some of the surprise winners, Bob. Craig Perks was the one that we couldn't think of.
Yeah. He went, what did he do? He went eagle, birdie, birdie to finish.
Yeah, I think he chipped in twice for those, didn't he?
Twice, yeah. Chipped in on 16 and 18. Yep. But yeah, he shot 4 under par. And then you talk about Ricky Fowler, as you were talking about last week, when Ricky Fowler played that hole, what, 3 times? 4 times.
On Sunday, yeah, 4 times.
On Sunday, and made birdie every time.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And then you got the leader currently at 14 under par. And, that's Wyndham Clark. And he's made birdie on the 17th hole of the last 2 days in the first 2 rounds.
What hole hasn't he birdied? A pair of 65s. Yeah. I mean, the guy's lighting it up. Crazy. You know, he has been trending. He's been playing well this year. But to see him jump out and do what he's doing. And you know what the thing is interesting is he was kind of piling on last week. And you heard Babs reference it in hour number 1. That he was talking like the best players. He was among the best players in the world. And that would be shorter fields and all this kind of stuff. And yet we don't even heard of him a year ago. So not only is he talking the talk, but he's backing it up with some impressive play. And a nice little lead here going into the weekend.
Yeah, he hadn't won a golf tournament on the PGA Tour until Charlotte last year, and then he parlayed that into another win at the U.S. Open. So he's a guy that moved, that skyrocketed up the world golf rankings and became one of those elite players. So, and then to see him play how he's been playing on the Ryder Cup and all that kind of thing is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, he won at AT&T. It was shortened, but he shot 60. Had a putt for 59 at Pebble in that third round and ended up getting the shortened dub. Yeah, he did miss the cut at Riviera, but finished 2nd last week. So, you know, he's playing some good golf. He's playing at the right time, and here he is playing the Players' Championship and an opportunity to add to that U.S. Open Championship with a Players. I mean, that's pretty good stuff headed into the Masters, and we're just a few weeks away. Hey, when we come back, America's favorite caddy stops by. We'll get into all of that and much more. You're listening to Real Golf Radio.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
I think it'd be good for the game. I think anytime you have a figure that kind of dominates, like the NBA, you look at Steph Curry for those years where the Warriors were winning a bunch. I mean, people would say they got tired of it, but at the end of the day, people were still, you know, showing up and watching because he was incredible to watch, and you want to watch, you know, greatness when you're out there. And so I think it'd be good for the game of golf, and you know, we'll see what happens in the sport in the next few years. It's a pretty challenging game, and we got a lot of talent out here. So, you know, being that dominant figure, I think is a very tall task to ask of anybody. But, you know, we got some guys out here that I think can definitely pull it off.
That was Scottie Scheffler earlier this week at the Players, asked about whether or not he or someone else could be a dominant figure in the game like Tiger was for so long, and if that would be good for the game or not. And you heard him right there in his explanation. He referenced Steph Curry and the fact that people like to watch greatness. You know, there is an interesting part of that, Bob, because when Tom Brady was winning Super Bowls, everybody hated Tom Brady. Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are winning Super Bowls. Now everybody wants to root against them. You know, there does become a little bit of that. I don't remember people necessarily rooting against Tiger in the game, I guess, unless you just weren't a Tiger guy, right? So there was, because this is, there's not fan affiliation amongst the teams, it's a little bit different. But in hour number 1, we had Jeff Babineau on the show, and you asked him that, if he felt like it would be important to have a more dominant player, or if you like the parity in the game, which we seem to be experiencing a lot more of right now. And Jeff was in favor as a journalist, and I thought he was pretty good to clarify or qualify his statement and his opinion is that he is looking for stories. And it's a lot easier for him to find stories with more players that people haven't heard of, because then he can tell their story. If everybody knows the everything about the players and the stories have all been told about the players that are out there, and it's the same players week after week, then it becomes more challenging and maybe for a journalist less interesting to be able to find those stories and share those stories. So that's his take. What was your thoughts on Scheffler's, and what's your opinion? Do you think we need a guy out there like a Tiger that goes out and dominates?
Well, Tiger, let's not forget, Tiger maybe played 15 to 18 tournaments a year. Okay, so that was a limited portion of the PGA Tour season. The PGA Tour season is a long season. Okay, it's made shorter because they're doing the signature events and you get more of those guys coming in and playing every week as far as signature events are concerned. But you know what? There's a lot of ways for guys to have worked their way up. And when Tiger was playing back in the day, he was dominant because he was that much better than everybody else. So the thing I like is I like there to be a dominant guy, but I like to see those stories that Jeff was talking about how guys can work their way into being an elite player from the start, kind of like Scheffler's done and Wyndham Clark's done and all those guys have done.
But in truth, Bob, and I agree with you, in truth, do you think Scheffler or Wyndham Clark, who's playing really good golf right now, or Rory McIlroy, should he find and put it all together, you know, do you think that any of these guys are capable of doing what Tiger was able to do, what Jack was able to do? And by the way, it's a short list. Who else are you going to throw in there that was able to do what those two players did for dominating for so long?
Well, it's consistency throughout their process of being on the PGA Tour. And the only way they can get to that point is to continue to win. It's not about just making money. It's about winning golf tournaments. And if you win golf tournaments, then you're going to become an elite player that is dominant in the game.
You know what? Let's cue up all of the Tiger cuts that he talked about how much money he was trying to win in his career. Okay, ready?
None.
Oh, wait, I don't have any. And I think that's part of the problem today is so much of the focus is on cash, money, purses, all that kind of thing. Tiger was not out to win money. That's not why he did it. Tiger was out to win championships, major championships, and try to become the best that's ever played this sport. And because that was his focus, he was able to accomplish that. And by the way, he made a lot of money. And I think that's the difference. I think that's where the fan fatigue comes from. And we'll talk more about that coming up later in the show. But interesting stuff. You know what, who we need to bring on to talk a little more about this is the caddy. But I want to reset because I don't want to go down this road with the caddy just yet. Let's bring Scottie Scheffler back in. More of his comments on the 17th and the challenge that it presents this week at the Players.
It's pretty wild when you get here in person. Sometimes when you're standing there in the practice room, you're like, how could people ever miss this green? And then you get up there and you start standing over your shot and you're like, man, wait a minute, like the wind's blowing off the right, like it's kind of firm now. And it's a lot harder in competition than it is in practice, but it's always really special. You know, you grew up watching this golf tournament, and to be here playing is always a special treat.
There you go. It is something that I know the caddy has talked about on numerous occasions, that it's the only hole that he knows that players are thinking about well before they ever get to that point. And speaking of America's favorite caddy,
there are bag rats. And then there are caddies. Baby. Pro jocks who are legends in caddy shacks across the PGA Tour. While we can neither confirm nor deny the existence of this legendary looper, here he is, the caddy, on Real Golf Radio.
Yeah, the caddy has grabbed the flag off of 18 after his player won this very Players Championship. So this is a guy that knows a little something about this golf course. Caddy, how are you?
Oh, yeah, this is a fun thing for me to watch. It's reliving memories. I can't believe it, how long ago it was. It was, let's just say it might have been a couple decades ago since since this happened. Yeah. But I like this place. Come on, it's a major, isn't it? You know it's a major. It's a major.
Well, it's considered the fifth major.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's four majors and the Players is the fifth. Okay. We're good to go. Next subject.
Hey, you heard Scotty talking about 17. I mean, what a great comment, right? Where you're standing on the range singing, this shouldn't even be a worry. And then you get on the tee, it's a different story, huh?
it's so easy on Monday and Tuesday, and it looks so easy. And it is amazing how is it so hard on Saturday and Sunday? he couldn't have said it better. That's exactly what it's like. It's exactly what it's like.
It's interesting. When they first started playing that Players Championship at TPC Sawgrass, I can remember I was with my dad on the PGA Tour Champions, and Don January had played in the event. Everybody was saying, well, what's it like 17 and everything. And Don January said, it's the only golf course that I know of, when you stand on the first tee and you're getting ready to hit your drive, you're thinking about the 17th hole already.
Yeah, as a caddy, you're thinking about Wednesday on 17 before you even get to the tournament. So that's how bad it is for caddies. Anyway, we're talking about
the caddy tournament. The caddy tournament, right?
Yeah.
So here's the thought about 17. If you took a plank of wood that was about 2 or 3 feet wide and fairly thick and laid it down on your floor or outside in front of your house, and it was 30 feet long, and you walked across it, you walked down it, right? Would you ever have a problem walking across that? Would you ever fall off it? You could ride your bike across it. You could run across it. You could run backwards. No problem, right? You're never gonna leave that plank of wood that's 3 feet wide. But if I elevate that 100 feet in the air, now do it. That's the difference between Tuesday and Sunday. That's the 17th. It's all mental, folks.
Oh, that's funny. That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it is. It just, can you get over that? And there are some flying Willendas who can do it. And then, if you fail, it's a pretty big consequence.
You know, what's really cool. What's really crazy about that hole also is when you look at it from the tee, you can see the water in front and the water to the sides. But you hit it too long, and it's a one bounce over that green and into the water, which you don't ever see.
My player, the year he won, hit in the final round, hit an absolute, like, the perfect shot. It was blowing too. It was left to right hurt. It was not easy. And the ball was in the air, and I was watching it, and I thought, you know what? He might have just made a hole-in-one. It's going to hit pin high. It's going to catch that slope. It's crispy and fast. It's going to trickle down there. This is the most amazing shot under pressure. It flew maybe two steps further than we thought. That's not a very bad miss, is it? Two steps? And it almost ended up in the water. And I couldn't have imagined a better shot. And it almost ended up over the green in the water, like you're describing, Bob. It's just, man, it's something else. Who I still think, maybe it was John Mahaffey had the line, somebody way back when said it's the easiest par five on the course.
Yeah. Hey, Caddy, we're just getting started, but we got to take a quick break. When we come back, more with the Caddy, including I got to ask you about the drops that Rory took on 7 and 18 in that first round. Created quite the discussion. We'll talk about it next right here on Real Golf Radio.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Talking golf with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
One day you'll get it.
Here's Brian and Bob.
All right, welcome back to Real Golf Radio. Brian Taylor, Bob Casper, and America's favorite caddy. Hey, a couple things have gone on this week. One of the things I wanted to get your opinion on is Rory's first round drops that he had and trying to determine if they were taken correctly, and the fact that Spieth and Hovland were in on the conversation and that they didn't speak to the media afterwards. It just has made a lot of people, question whether or not that was the right thing to do. The way I look at it, it's a big old nothing burger, although it is interesting for fans and golfers to be able to listen to the way tour pros handle that kind of a situation, because sometime we'll find ourselves in a similar situation helping out a player that we're playing with take a drop. Given all the things that went on, let's just focus on seven, for instance, because, I mean, I don't know if you saw the live from guys afterwards. Johnson Wagner was out there pitching golf balls in there trying to replicate bounces to show exactly what might have happened or what a camera could have picked up or not picked up. I sort of had to chuckle a little bit about how geeky we are sometimes about this whole thing. Did it cross? Yeah, we think it's about here. Drop it, play on. And yet it turned into we almost had a national disaster. Like, we almost had to declare a state of emergency there around the Jacksonville area because of what went on.
I think the TV guys just salivate when something like that happens, because think about the amount of time they have to fill on the air on the Golf Channel talking about the same thing over and over and over and trying to do a different analysis or trying to throw another angle. That's why you might complain about, gosh, I can't stand that guy on the Golf Channel. He keeps doing, well, they got to talk for 8 hours about, there's only so much to talk about. So when something like this happens, the media loves it. And then, of course, you have all the hall monitors at home who have to chime in on Twitter about, you know, what everybody in the world who's the best at what they do are doing wrong while they're shooting 98 at their home club. And it just opens up so much cool stuff. But here's some insight from the tour about this situation, which is basically judging where a ball last crossed the hazard. It's that simple, right? You're trying to make a judgment. Well, first of all, on a lot of tee shots, you're anywhere from 100 to almost 300 yards away from where that thing lands. And it's not that easy to judge with your eyeball where something's bending and curving and crossing. And eyewitness testimony and our eyewitness evidence in the scientific world is just not used. You don't even use it. It's like the worst thing ever. Oh, I saw that person. That was him. It definitely crossed here. I saw it cross here. You can pretty much throw that out. So unfortunately, you have to use that to make these judgments. So it's, unless you have a camera showing the flight of the ball, it's all subjective opinion. That's the problem. Now, even sometimes cameras will deceive. You can get a bad camera angle. It can make it look here when it's really there. There's lots of stories about that too. So what you have to do in golf is rely on the integrity of the player to judge.
And players in the group. And players in the group as well. Yeah.
So what I don't really know, believe it or not, I can tell you on tour, I can't count the number of times somebody asked me, hey, have you ever called out a player for taking a drop where he shouldn't have? And I said, no. And here's why. It's because unless it's a physical impossibility that it couldn't have crossed over there, which can happen, you can have a physical impossibility. It's a matter of opinion at that point in time. And so you do see there's plenty of times when guys will go, oh yeah, you know, they'll be playing with the guy. You'll get done. And then they'll be complaining about how he fudged the drop. And I'll be like, well, why didn't you say something? If he didn't like where he dropped it, confront the guy, right? So there is a little bit of that that can go on now and then. I've seen it a fair number of times over 25 or 30 years. But it's not real prevalent. They're human beings are all different. Some people bend the rules. Some people break the rules. Some people punish themselves with the rules. There's all different kinds of people. And I think the way Rory handled it, I didn't really see 18. I saw where he hit his third shot from, which was spectacular. 290 yards out, knocked it on the green. Are you kidding me? But I watched number seven quite a bit, and I thought he handled it really well. I wasn't really sure what Jordan was saying. I'm not sure what he was, you know, doing, but in the group, everybody wants to make sure you make the best judgment on the shot. And that left side of that hole there, you can't, unless you're standing there in that little gap between the bunker and the water, you can't see a thing from the right side. You would have no idea where that crossed, 0.0 idea, where it crossed from anywhere to the right of that bunker. Even if you were standing on the left fairway, you couldn't tell where it ended. because it's a hill. It's a downhill. It's a pretty good down. It's probably 4 or 5 feet down to the water from the top of that hill. You could see it. It's physically blocked. So I don't know if there was a marshal or, but even if there was somebody standing out there down the left side, which I doubt there was, because that's very much in the field of view and you wouldn't want someone standing there if you were a player. But if there was someone standing there watching it, it's still the hazard line's like a foot and a half above the water. It's very rare that it would hit between the hazard line and the water itself. It would almost 99% of the time, 95% of the time, it's going to hit above the hazard line and then bounce over. So the drop is more a matter of not whether it crossed the red line, but how far did it go when it bounced and landed left. And if you watch the video with the bunkers on number six in the reference in the background, he looked like he dropped it in an absolutely exact place.
Yeah.
Exact. It was a great judgment on his part, yeah. I thought. And I think the kind of amusing part for me watching it is just how many people can get riled up about it who have no idea what they're talking about.
And you're right about Jordan. Yeah. He's walking over saying, "We got eyewitnesses over here that these people are all saying." And I love, Rory's caddy that said, Who are these people? I love that.
Harry Diamond would have a line of the day right there.
Who are these people?
No, I think Jordan said something like, "Everybody's saying," and Harry goes, "Who is everybody?"
Yeah, that's it. I mean,
wow. I thought Harry was going to take off his hat and start waving it and saying, "Who do you think you are?" Just making a Ryder Cup. I won't go there.
Yeah, I see what you did there. Yeah, nice job.
You know what I'm
saying. So, Caddy, it's been really fun this week because we've been getting commentary, or the last couple of weeks, we've been caught getting video and commentary from you on what was happening with golf. And today you sent out a little video to me and Brian of Wyndham Clark. And you say, "Okay, why is he playing so well? Da, da, da." And he turns through and he goes, "There it is. It's the yardage book." How important is that yardage book for players?
Well, as you know, I cannot give an unbiased opinion on this subject, but I'll tell you how important. Here's what I'd like to do. Let's go back to greens books. We get greens books, yardage books, and golf clubs, or on the first tee of a competitive event. If I said to the caddy and the player, "You've got to give me two of three things, yardage book, greens book, or one of your golf clubs, and then you can go play," I bet you a significant percentage of the field would give you the greens book and a golf club and keep the yardage book out there with them. That's how important the yardage book is.
Wow.
It may be, it's a big deal for these guys to have that. I mean, it's dialed in. They know within a yard or two all the time exactly how far they have to go. It's a very precise world they live in. And they are that good when they're on, where 133 and 135 can make all the difference. That happened to us. That's a perfect example of at the Players that year I'm talking about. If the number had been two less, we would have hit one club less on 17. 2 yards less, and we would have hit a different club. So that's how big a deal it is to have that thing. And they've got all their notes in there. Look, how many times you watch on TV, you probably can't go more than a minute or two on TV without seeing somebody looking in that book. I'm watching right now and I'm seeing two caddies staring in the book on the green as Rory's getting ready to putt. What they're doing is they're looking at the next hole right now. They're looking at the tee. They're thinking about the tee location. They're looking at the hole. There they are. They're both looking at the book right now. They're staring at it. I mean, it's a big deal. That's all.
Hey, what do you make of Wyndham Clark and what he's doing right now? I mean, 65-65. He played well last week at Bay Hill. Seems to be trending a little bit. Won at a shortened event at Pebble. And obviously, he's the reigning U.S. Open champ. I mean, this is a guy we really didn't know a whole lot about until he's just kind of gone on a tear of late. What's your thoughts on what you've seen out of Wyndham this week and the kind of player that he is?
Well, I haven't seen him in person hit a golf ball, but I've certainly watched what everybody else has. I know his story and his background. I live in Denver now. He's from here, so I've certainly heard my fair share of Wyndham Clark stories. And the guy is, he's all that. He's the real deal. There's no question he could be number one in the world. He's that good. He's over good. He's Phil Mickelson coming out of college, maybe not quite to that level, but I mean, you know, you pick the best guy coming out of college that who were very successful, Bryson DeChambeau, those kind of guys. He's the real deal. It's he had some interesting struggles, you know, having to do with his mom and his family and things like that, that, you know, he had to get through. And I think that slowed him down in college from being, you know, that guy who was coming out that everybody knew about. But he's figured it out, and he seems to have it going, you know, everything in place. And what a game. What a beautiful golf swing. It's a flawless golf swing. It's unbelievably powerful. He hits it miles. He can flat out putt. He's got a look at the U.S. Open. How good was his short game on Sunday? He never flinched.
That was the amazing thing at L.A. You kept thinking he's gonna do something under the pressure, and all he did was, I mean, he was stone cold, man. I mean, the guy was just, everything was good. That was impressive.
Yep, I would so buy his stock if he was a company. It's not even funny.
I like that. Yep. All right. Well, you got Scottie Scheffler, who seemed to have found a putter and ran away with Bay Hill last week. You got Wyndham Clark, that's certainly trending, and he's in a good position going into the weekend this week. And the Masters is coming up in 3 weeks. So it's all good stuff. That's exciting.
Yes, it's going to be a great event to watch. And look, Wyndham's off to a great start, and he's going to be tough to catch. But we are talking about TPC Sawgrass, where you can have a six-shot swing in a hole and a half. And it can happen to the best of them. So don't turn off the TVs.
I like that. Parting advice.
Just keep watching.
From America's favorite caddy. Caddy, thanks so much, man. Always good to visit with you. And enjoy the weekend of the Players.
Thank you, gentlemen.
There you go. That's the caddy right here on Real Golf Radio. And he had some good ones. We also caught one before we went on the air that we're going to have to play for you coming back, because that one was pretty good as well. So we'll hit a little bit more of the caddy when we have the opportunity. But thanks again to the caddy for joining us. Stay tuned. More of the show. Players Championship Edition continues next.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
All right, welcome back to the show. It's brought to you in part by Black Desert Resort in St. George, Utah. Go to blackdesertresort.com. Find out about the exclusive real estate opportunities available while they last. Right now, they're selling Family Village, which are condo units, studio, one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and three-bedroom condo units that surround the water park. Yeah, like a water park with Lazy River, Rapid River, a couple of surf wave pools. This thing's super neat, and you can own one of these, put it in the resort rental program. It'll deliver some rental income for you and give you access as an owner where you can have discounted and priority tee times. You can get discounts on your dining and shopping while you're there and be a part of this resort that's getting set to open up this fall and welcome the PGA Tour in October. Black Desert Resort. com. And thanks again for joining us. Thanks to the caddy for spending some time here on a Players Championship edition of the show. And I'll tell you, we've kind of started rolling a little more before we bring the caddy on so that we can catch a few nuggets, like the caddy uncut. We're going to start putting, in fact, maybe we ought to just have a whole caddy uncut like Twitter page for just the caddy. But here's what he had to say about Rory McIlroy. As we were recording this, he was watching Rory play. Here's some caddy uncut.
I was impressed just a second ago. Rory hits 3 wood off of number 5, right? I mean, we should just study this human being for generation of power by a smurf. I mean, Fred Funk can dunk on Rory, and he hits his 3 wood and just launches it like 340 down the center, and Hovland rips the drive, who's not short, by the way. Hovland launches the drive, it just pures it, and he gets within 8 yards of Rory's fairway wood. I'm just like, are you kidding me? He's amazing.
Spaghetti. He doesn't let his high voice come into the show very often, but that was pretty funny. The way
he's amazing.
Yeah. You can believe that guy? So, yeah. By the way, Rory hits it pretty far. Let's go back to last week at Bay Hill, Bob, the 10th hole. Mm-hmm. 365 yards, he puts it on the green.
Yes, he did.
I mean, we talk about Bryson DeChambeau trying to cut the water on, is it, what hole is that? Is it six?
Well, that's like number six, yeah. Yep.
And so here Rory just steps up and rips it on the front of that green. And I mean, that's pretty impressive stuff.
And right over the crowd and right over the corner, there's a house there too. And he hits it right over the top of him and puts it on the green.
By the way, how about those fans and the trust factor to stand up? Down the barrel, point blank.
Yep.
And just be like, hey, look at this. This is cool. He's like, seems like he's looking right at us.
Pretty crazy. There's no chance. But Rory, this week, it's kind of interesting. You know, we're talking about how he is the best driver of the ball in the game. And of course, he is, absolutely. But this is a golf course where you don't have to hit like crazy, stupid long drives. There's enough flow and movement in this golf course off the tee, requiring you to hit fades and draws off the tee. And Rory's longest one this week is 338, and his average distance is 297. So he's 47th for the week in driving distance. But what really stands out to me is last week his greens in regulation had really fallen off. Now this week, they've come back. His green in regulation, he's tied for 17th, and his putts per green in regulation, he is tied for 3rd right now. So he is working on his game, building towards the Masters, and trying to bring it all together. That's what these guys do. That's what Tiger Woods did. They're trying to bring it all together so that they have a chance to win that green jacket, and especially Rory, to be able to try and get that career grand slam.
That's all that matters to Rory right now, to be honest with you. That's all. That's why he said maybe he'd win a green jacket and just walk away, talking about he's got 10 more years on tour. So, yeah, that's really interesting. And then, you know, there's also the news that was kind of talked about with his tee length. He's using a shorter tee this year so that he tees it down lower. And Harry, his caddy, only has the go-ahead, if the green light, to give him the long tee one time around. How about that?
Interesting. And, you know, thinking about that, is it means that he's trying to hit the ball more consistent and hit more fairways, kind of like what Tiger Woods did in 2019 when he won the Masters and he got in contention and was leading the golf tournament coming down the stretch. He teed it low and he hit what he called the squeeze fade because he knew he could get that in the fairway. So, that's some things that Rory is working on right now.
I love that. The squeeze fade. Tiger, by the way, came up with more golf vernacular. I mean, traj, right? I mean, just go on and on the different things that...
firing his glutes.
Activate the glutes. Yeah, that was activate one. Man, I'll never forget that at the Farmers. And you know what? As I've as I've gotten older, Bob, I start to realize the importance of, you know, getting your muscles moving, whether it's activating your glutes or what have you. But yeah, I mean, I get what he's saying, but nobody had ever said that in golf before. Nope. Activate the glutes. Never. What in the world is Tiger talking about now?
Where did that come from?
Yeah. But all right. So Rory McIlroy, before we leave Rory, in his press conference, he talked more about this, the comments he made last week at Bay Hill, suggesting that he's in favor of a more cutthroat and smaller tour, fewer tour cards, is what he said. And then this week, he went on to say, hey, look, I'm all for more opportunities for the young guys. I like the churn, he said. So you got 30, 40 guys churning in, 30, 40 guys churning out. And he didn't say it, but if I was interpreting what he said, it's essentially we need to just go ahead and get rid of the middle guy. The journeyman, the guy that's never really stepping up to the big stage, but's never doing it, playing bad or poorly enough to lose his card, you know? And so I don't know. I mean, what do you think of that? It still goes against the meritocracy, which to me is at the heart of this sport.
Exactly. And you need to give people an opportunity to make it and an opportunity to improve their skills to get to that top echelon in the game. So to say that, it's almost like the rich want to get richer, and they want to be able to win more golf tournaments. And because there's not as many players in the field, in my opinion, I think these signature events should go to 120 like they have it at Tiger's event and Arnold's event, and they're going to at Jack's event.
Well, Arnold's is only 70, but yeah.
Yeah, I think they go to 120 and they make a cut. I think that is more healthy for the game than just saying, we're going to do signature events with no cuts.
I think it's more impactful for the integrity of the sport, if you will. I don't know if it's more impactful for those that are putting up the $20, $25 million purse that wants to ensure that the names that they have invited that are going to come are still there playing on the weekend, right? I mean, I think that's the whole point, is it's guaranteed money for the advertisers. I want to sponsor the game where LeBron James plays against Steph Curry, okay?
Sure, sure.
But then if all of a sudden LeBron James gets tossed for a two technical fouls in the first half and he does not play the second half, you know, my sponsorship just went down. People are upset, right?
Yeah, but the story behind it also is a huge part around it, and will still bring eyes to the game, and they can still media and that kind of thing can still sensationalize on that as well. But you know, it's all about the fans. It's all about what the PGA Tour and what sport can do to keep the eyeballs on. Max Homa had some opinions this week as well, and he said that there's three things you can do to increase the viewership. Less commercials, first of all, which is going to be tough for the sponsors and also for television to recoup dollars back and that kind of thing. The other thing he said would be interested, which I agree with, is a tracker for the cut, so that when television is showing it, it's almost like, you know, making it into the top 70 or making it in the top 50 or the top 30 in the playoffs. Have a tracker for the cut to show where somebody stands in the cut line. And then the other thing is get Tiger Woods to play more.
Oh, well, hey, but you can't rely on that. I mean, we've talked about the dominant player thing, but yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's I'm sure that was a little bit of a
tongue in cheek.
Yeah. A little throw in there. So,
yep.
Yeah, it's interesting. Jay Monahan, again, had an hour press conference, said a lot. We didn't learn a lot. And I think that some of it is the nature of ongoing negotiations. Others is, I'm not sure. But one of the guy who had to follow him was Xander Schauffele. And Xander Schauffele, of course, because he was the first one to follow him, was the one that got all the questions, you know, about Jay Monahan as a leader and so forth. And so here's, I mean, this was pretty raw stuff, but this is what Xander Schauffele had to say about whether he felt Jay Monahan was the guy to continue to lead the PGA Tour.
You know, trust is something that's pretty tender. So words are words, and I'd say in my book, he's got a long way to go. He could be the guy, but in my book, he's got a long way to go to gain the trust of the membership. I'm sure he's got the support of the board since they were with him making some of those decisions. But for me personally, he's got quite a ways to go.
What do you think sticking most with him? The fact that he didn't learn about that June 16th thing until it actually happened? I mean, is that what he's talking about?
Yeah, he was pretty critical about Jay Monahan and what's going on and what's right for the membership of the game. And so he's still not 100% satisfied with what's happening, especially for the membership. And so for him to come out and say that is right down the line of what he's thinking and what's important right now. And now going forward, we're going to have to see if that all comes together and if he's okay with all of it.
Well, whether he's okay with it or not is one thing, but it's the collect. Is he speaking for the collective tour? Is this how most of the tour players feel, or is this just
a lot of them do?
So that's the issue, right?
Yeah.
And Jay Monahan, when he's asked if he was the guy, I mean, what a tough question to ask a guy. What's he supposed to say, right?
No, I'm not the guy.
Yeah. Well, I'm probably not the guy. Well, his answer was he kind of went off on some stuff for a while and then he came back to, but in my heart of hearts, I believe I'm the guy.
Yeah.
Almost like, okay, well, I'm glad you have that internal fortitude, you know, to know that you're that guy. But what you're saying and the confidence I'm gleaning from you isn't there. That to me was the biggest thing, right? That was the biggest
and
thing.
Rory came out and said that he is the guy, that he's been in meetings and everything with him. Tiger Woods has said that by what he's gone through with him as well. Those guys both believe that he is the guy.
Well, I believe they're saying some company lines there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is the way I would kind of look at that. I don't mean to minimize it, but.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, Scotty Scheffler, one more time. We've played this one, but I wanted to hit it one more time on this whole splintered thing and his comments.
I guess it's a pretty broad question. And when you're talking about a fan perspective, you're talking about millions of people. And so there's always a lot of perspectives in that group. It just depends on who has the loudest voice. And I mean, at the end of the day, I think we're trying to do our best to create the best product for the fans, but we can't control whether or not guys want to leave. If guys want to go take the money and leave, then that's their decision. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell guys not to take hundreds of millions of dollars. If that's what they think is best for their life, then go do it. I'm not going to sit here and force guys to stay on our tour. But at the end of the day, this is where I want to be. And you know, we're continuing to grow what we're doing, and what they're doing is not really a concern to me. And if the fans are upset, then look at the guys that left. You know, we had a tour, we were all together, and the people that left are no longer here. And at the end of the day, that's where the splintering comes from.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree with him. You know, I think he's spot on. So, there you go. He's figured out his putter. He won by 5 last week, and we'll see what he does as he leads up to the Masters. But the man to keep an eye on is Wyndham Clark, a pair of 65s. What impressive playing by the 3-time winner and current U.S. Open champ. That's going to do it for us. Hope you enjoyed that. Enjoy the weekend of the Players. For Dave Glauser, our producer, and Bob Casper, I'm Brian Taylor. We'll see you next week right here on Real Golf Radio.
Thank you for listening to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper. Follow us on Twitter at Real Golf and join us every week on the Real Golf Radio Network.